This is a Times Online podcast.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 108 of the Bugle audio newspaper for a visual world for the week beginning Monday, the 22nd of March 2010, with me, Andy Zaltzman, in the picturesque former urban wasteland of Wapping in London. And in New York's glamorous New York district, it's the man born with quips on his lips, a jest in his chest, funny in his tummy, wit in his tit, a small gag in his ball bag, frolics in his, and a wisecrack down his never you mind, young lady. It's John, the Ike of the mic, Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. And hello for the first time to Chris, the shiniest, squeakiest, and newest member of Team Bugle. This is Bugle the Next Generation, Andy. We're moving forwards, not backwards, forwards. Always forwards. Now, here's a story from this week, Andy. Snoop Dogg, or Snoop Doggy Dog, to give him his full christened name, was a guest on The Daily Show this week. And not only did he smoke so many drugs in his dressing room that it was almost as if he was doing an impression of a caricature of himself, but as he waddled down the corridor to our studio, one of our dogs was lying down in front of him. Yeah. And Snoop looked down, pointed at the dog, and simply said, "Bow wow." He is a man of few words, Andy, and those words are often animal noises. What was going through his head? Was he so high that he was reduced to a childlike state of pointing at things and guessing the noises they make? That's right, Snoop. Dogs do go bow wow. Can you tell me what noise cows make? Moo. That's right, Snoop. What about horses? Meow. No, Snoop. That's cats. What sound do horses make? Nay! That's it, Snoop. Good dog. Now roll over and let me tickle your stomach.
So, welcome, Chris. Now, I should say that the normal studio is being used today, so I'm actually recording alone in an empty, unused TV studio. John, have you ever recorded in anything that's a metaphor for your own career? But anyway, so Chris is here, but he's not in this room, but he can hear us. Hello, Chris.
Hello. Introduce
yourself to the Buglers.
Hi, Buglers. I'm Chris.
There you go. What a sprightly, pleasant, friendly. Didn't have that kind of downbeat, oh, the world is crushing me spirit of Tom.
This is Bugle 2.0.
Let's give it three bugles, and we will lower the pitch of that voice by at least an octave.
So we'll have some of your emails to welcoming Chris to the show later on. This is Bugle 108. A baseball has 108 stitches, reputedly one for each time Abraham Lincoln said, "Hot diggity," after after swinging and missing in the White House batting cage the day he died, before saying, "Oh, for 108, this, let's go take in a show." Mary Todd, where in the name of Stevie Stovepipe did you learn to pitch? 108, also the number of times Tom Cruise has tried to put tropical fish in his swimming pool, only for them to die of chlorine poisoning. And the number of tattoos on Princess Anne's back. Well, have you ever seen her back? No, they're mostly of horses, although one is of the wartime pin-up Betty Grable smoking a crack pipe. And the other one is of her ex-husband Mark Phillips dressed up like the Virgin Mary. Buckingham Palace, can we please have an explanation? And also, it's Monday, for the week beginning Monday the 22nd of March, means it's 245 years, John, since the British Parliament passed the Stamp Act of 1765. And that act was a tax on our American colonies to pay for our military expenses. And this was the first effort to directly tax the colonies, and it happened because Britain had all but fully imploded into riots and revolt after the government tried to impose a tax on cider here in Britain. So, big mistake. So they taxed America instead. Big mistake. America threw a strop. The tax was never collected because the collectors were intimidated, and it was junked after less than a year. And 238 years later, almost to the day, Britain goaded America into launching a ruinously expensive and legally questionable war. So revenge is sweet.
Top story this week, Africa Special. Andy, Africa struggles to make it onto TV news in the West, which is particularly unlucky when you consider just how many newsworthy things they do. They just can't catch a break from the schedulers, who don't seem to quite give enough of a shit about what goes on over there to give it the airtime it deserves. What more do they need to do? Famines, mass genocides, coups, even pirates? Nothing seems to be able to hold the Western media's attention. So this is a Bugle update on what is going on in the second largest continent on Earth.
Well, it's interesting. It is the second largest continent on Earth, John. And I actually typed the words Africa, continent of, ... into an internet search engine. And it's a continent of many things, John. It's a continent of change. That's one of the first things up in the search result. A continent of opportunities. A continent of contrasts. Then a continent of the future. A continent of dualities, which is a bit like contrasts. A continent of economic opportunity. Now, there we're laying our cards on the table about exactly what kind of opportunities those opportunities I mentioned earlier were. A continent of origins. OK, we get it. We're sorry. A continent of hope. That's just a nicer way of saying economic opportunity. A continent of light. That doesn't really mark it out from any other continents, to be fair. A continent of my dreams. How do they know? Bit presumptuous. Continent of hope and opportunity. Well, they've whacked two of them together. There, that's efficiency. A continent of Obama's origin. Well, where's that going, John?
I mean,
it could be good. It could be he's not eligible to be president, you know. He's not. He's not. Anyway, it's already the continent of origin, so they're just falling into celebrity culture like all the other continents now. It's the continent of 2,000 languages. That puts me off. It sounds overcomplicated. Continent of potential. That's a bit like the future, a bit like opportunities, a bit like hope. Three for one. I like it. Continent of adventure. That really was Africa's problem throughout the Imperial Age. And also, it's interesting that no one has gone with Africa, continent of the ravages of imperialist irresponsibility and religio-politically exacerbated HIV epidemics, which, you know, seems to be fairly near the top of the list. Also, Africa, continent of half of Andy Zaltzman's recent family origins. That's not there either. So.
True.
Or so Africa, the continent that puts the K into chaos.
So first stop on our new safari, Nigeria, where the acting president there, President Goodluck Jonathan, has dissolved the entire country's cabinet. And first, you're right to giggle, Andy. Let's just deal with what is a sensational name for any president.
Yeah.
But it's even better for a Nigerian one. Goodluck Jonathan. Not so much a name as a piece of good wishery.
That's
President
right.
Goodluck Jonathan is to be followed by President Hang In There McGee, who will in turn be succeeded by President Give It Your Best Shot Stevenson.
Sorry, my little alarm. What's going off there? It does sound a bit like what a departing British governor might have said as he handed over the newly independent Nigeria in 1960. Good luck, Jonathan. You'll need it. And he's been in charge since President Umaro Yar'Adua was hospitalised in Saudi Arabia last November, and he hasn't been seen in public since. And also, another good name, Yar'Adua, sounds a bit like what South African President Jacob Zuma says whenever he sees any woman. Yar'Adua! Concentrate on your job, Jacob. Concentrate on your job.
Let's also remember that Nigeria has a long and proud history of acting presidents, specifically people acting like presidents, while focusing most of their time on their main job of being international racketeers. But Goodluck Jonathan, as you say, was only appointed to acting president on February the 9th, and his powers were supposed to allow him to sign legislation, chair cabinet meetings, reshuffle ministers, and release oil funds. And he has certainly reshuffled those ministers, Andy. He briefly shuffled their cards before throwing the entire deck out the window, saying, "Get the f*** out of here!" And the information minister in Nigeria was quoted as saying, "Today, the acting president of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, Goodluck Jonathan," he didn't laugh there, I don't know, I cannot understand why that isn't the case, "dissolved the Federal Executive Council. He did not give us any reason, and so I cannot give any reason." Well, that's pretty impressive moves from someone in office for only slightly longer than a month. He was only supposed to keep the chair warm, not set fire to it and commission a new bejeweled throne for himself instead. But you have to look at this from his point of view, Andy. The taste of power is very Moorish. It's like heroin. You try it, maybe it turns out you like it, and suddenly you'll break any law to have some more of it. You think you're happy just as vice president of the largest nation in Africa. Next thing you know, you're stealing copper piping from people's houses to sell and giving out hand jobs for smack. It happens that quickly, Andy. I have seen the wire.
Sounds like chapter two of your autobiography, John. Yeah, and also, this information came from Dora Akunyili, who's the information minister. And if the information minister cannot give any reason why the cabinet's been reshuffled, no one can. Good luck, Jonathan. Had been seen as something of a low-profile administrator, sort of safe pair of hands to keep things ticking over gently until the president was fit again. Not as someone who would completely dissolve the country's entire cabinet. But things, John, are never simple in oil-rich, poverty-stricken Nigeria. Hang on, how come those two words go together? Well, as usual, little Colin Corruption has come out to play. Corruption described by Human Rights Watch as being in Nigeria rampant and endemic. And part of the reason for this is that there was a drive to try and reduce it, at least. And the head of the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, Nuhu Ribadu, he claimed that in 2006, since independence, $380 billion had been stolen or wasted by Nigerian governments.
Wow.
He identified 31 sitting governors in Nigeria as being corrupt. And bear in mind that there were only 36 sitting governors in Nigeria at the time.
Holy shit.
But the problem is they were immune from prosecution at the time. And then he even had his boss convicted of corruption. And his boss was ordered to return... I'll give you a little multiple choice quiz on this. How much dodgy money did his boss, the Inspector General of Police in Nigeria, have to pay back, John? Was it A, $50,000? Surely can't have been any more than that. Yes. Was it B, $500,000? This guy seriously had his fingers in some pies. Or C, $120 million?
And it can only have been $50,000. That's the only realistic option there.
Well, John, I know we love to bullshit on this show, but and you might think no one's going to filter that amount, but it was C. It was $120 million that the Inspector General of Police had to pay back. And this was far from isolated. Ribard had also helped undercover the involvement of the American construction company and until recently Halliburton subsidiary KBR, who'd been involved in a number of questionable activities, with a multi-million dollar bribery scandal in his country, for which the company was fined $400 million and its former chief executive jailed for 7 years. Now, America must be pretty embarrassed, John, at this company's proven corruption overseas, not to mention various other allegations, including covering up sexual assault and rape of female employees, involvement in people trafficking, allegedly, alleged tax avoidance, corruption, blah-de-blah, standard everyday glitches any business inevitably runs into. Is America embarrassed? Not really. It's the biggest US government contractor in Iraq. And besides, on its website, KBR states that its core values, quotes, which drive everything we do, include, quotes, integrity in all we do. Now, you simply have to admire the scope of this company's moral ambition. The challenge of having integrity in normal, above-board business dealings wasn't enough. Anyone can do that, but it takes a special kind of company to have integrity whilst bribing government officials. And if you can pull that off, you can be integritous anywhere. I say good luck to the I know I'm drifting off topic. We're not talking about corruption that stretches to the highest echelons of American politics. This is about dodgy Africa. My mistake.
That's right. So what happens now? Well, President Goodluck will apparently draw up a shortlist for a cabinet, which will be screened and approved by the Senate, although some disaffected former ministers may well mount court challenges to the constitutional legality of his assumption of executive powers and therefore his authority to sack them. And Andy, I just worry that this is going to damage the integrity and good name of the Nigerian government. And that really would be the biggest tragedy here.
Yep.
And let's not as well forget that this is a Nigerian fairy tale story for Goodluck. He's achieved the office of president in a democracy without ever having been elected to any major public office in his own right. Also, his wife Patience was investigated by anti-corruption officials, yes, in 2006, of allegations that she tried to launder some $13.5 million. Now, again, it almost counts as a plus, Andy. It's like Berlusconi in Italy. A Nigerian official without corruption is like a bolognese sauce without tomato. Not worthy of the name.
I often make a very fine bolognese sauce without much sweat. Maybe just a squeeze of tomato puree.
Yeah, so it's got tomatoes in it.
Well, a tiny bit. Tiny bit.
Yeah, well, it's condensed tomato, Andy. You've got the intensity of flavour with a puree.
But, well, see, the whole corruption thing, because this guy Ribadu, who was sort of viewed as one of the sort of pioneering anti-corruption activists and executives in world politics, a new government came in, a new Inspector General of Police, and he was removed from his post in order to go on a one-year training course, then survived a couple of assassination attempts and had to flee the country. And then, recently, just before the turn of the year, he himself was then being prosecuted for corruption. On obviously trumped-up charges. So, but interestingly, the Nobel laureate writer Wole Soyinka actually welcomed Good Luck Jonathan's move to dissolve the cabinet, and even described him as having been overcautious.
Wow.
Suggesting that he's actually trying to sweep it clean, so who knows?
Good.
Who knows?
Well, good luck to him. Good luck.
I think looking at this story as a whole, John, the next time we find ourselves getting annoyed at political corruption in our own countries, you know, MPs claiming a cheeky few hundred quid on expenses for a snooker table in the shape of Benjamin Disraeli to inspire them to do better politics, or gay senators voting not gay, I think we should just remember it really could be worse.
Crazy leader news now. And as always, Andy, if you ever find yourself with a hankering for a slice or two from the crazy pie, all you ever need to do is Google Colonel Gaddafi and recent statements, and you'll be directed straight to the pot of bullshit at the end of the rainbow. This week, Nigeria recalled its ambassador from Libya after Gaddafi suggested that Nigeria be divided into two states, one Christian and one Muslim. He backed this up by praising the partition of India in 1947 as just the kind of historic radical solution that could benefit Nigeria. Just to add some meat to those batshit bones, Andy, splitting India in 1947 caused a breakdown of law and order in which at least 200,000 people died. At least. In fact, some estimates say 1 million people were killed. About 12 million people were left homeless. Thousands were raped. Sounds good, Gaddafi. Sounds like a plan. Also, you only need to look at India and Pakistan now to see that they're getting on like a house on fire. A literal flaming house which is burning to the ground.
South African President Jacob Zuma, he's just survived a vote of no confidence called by opposition parties in South Africa. This follows an admission that he'd fathered a child out of wedlock, bringing his total of children up to, frankly, everyone has lost count. But he's been accused basically of setting a bad example to his people, and it's certainly to father a child out of wedlock when he already has three wives is not the most stirring example of practicing safe sex from a man leading one of HIV/AIDS's biggest breakthrough markets. I guess the equivalent would be a health minister announcing an anti-smoking drive by dressing up like a cigarette and burning himself at the stake. Actually, I'm not sure that's an accurate analogy. More like the Minister for Crime Reduction announcing a new anti-crime drive whilst wearing a balaclava, brandishing a large knife and holding multiple mobile phones. Or even like leaders of the world's richest nations at a G8 summit discussing the world food crisis, discussing it over an 18-course meal, which did, of course, happen. Zuma most recently married for the third time in January. And as Jane Austen so rightly and famously wrote, it is a truth universally acknowledged that a president in possession of a large country and two wives, plus two ex-wives and two other fiancés and an almost uncountable number of children, must be in want of another wife.
I owe President Zuma an apology, Andy, because last week when I was discussing scandals, I completely forgot him. I claimed that only British people could die with oranges in their mouths naked from the waist down, and only we had the real touch for political scandals. And of course, that's completely unfair. He is only one carriage down on the crazy train from Mugabe and Gaddafi himself. Like you say, three wives, new child out of wedlock, as we talked about a few weeks ago, sleeping with an HIV-positive woman without protection and claiming it was okay because he had a shower afterwards. I mean, the guy is outstanding. And also, the lovely little sub-detail to all of this is that the child he fathered was with Sono Koza, the daughter of local World Cup boss. So that's a pretty clever thing to do as well, just to smooth over the preparations for that tournament.
Well, I think I had heard that he had offered as a prize for the winning team that he would be willing to father a child by each of the wives of the winning squad. Oh,
that's very nice of him. that'll add some spice to the tournament, won't it?
Yeah, might see some pretty poor quality penalty shootouts. Well, let's have some positive Africa news now. And there's been a ceasefire with a major rebel group in Darfur between the rebel group and the Sudanese government, the second such deal of recent weeks. There's just one major band of rebels still left in open conflict. And I think, John, this proves that we in the international community were absolutely right to sit back and do fuck all about it.
Absolutely.
Because it worked out fine in the end. Look at it now, John. It's hunky-dory. Same as Iraq, where we went the other way. Two tough calls, two happy, happy outcomes. Well done, us.
Feature section now, animal technology. Andy, a washing machine for dogs is proving to be extremely popular in Japan.
Well, who could have guessed that would be the country that would develop a machine for shampooing your dog?
Well, it was actually designed in the US, Andy, the dog wash.
Well, it's taken off in Japan.
True.
Where else?
It gives pets an automatic drenching with warm water and a blow dry. What better use of the advances in science and technology than this, Andy? Renewable energy, that's a long-term project. Cure for cancer, we'll get to that somewhere down the line. Right now, I can think of no more pressing issue than how to mechanically shampoo a Cocker Spaniel. It is a disgrace that we've been sidetracked by the internet and by nanotechnology while dog owners have been forced to wash their furs a lot by hand. It stops now! Now!
Well, to me, John, Japan is always in the forefront of stupid dog technology. The self-throwing stick, the dog gym, including treadmill, the hydro walkies pool, and Foxit shented rolling mat, the remote control cat, all invented and popularised by Japan, if indeed they exist.
I've got to say, Andy, I watched the process online, and the dog did not seem to enjoy it at all. It took apparently 35 minutes, and what came out was an admittedly clean dog, but also an angry dog, Andy, with a look in its eye that seemed to suggest, I'm going to shit on every possession of sentimental value you own. That is now my life's mission. When we get home, I'm heading straight for the family photo albums. I'm going to eat them, digest them, and 6 hours later, I'm going to shit them all over your old wedding dress. You did this. You did it.
There's also a Korean version available in which the machine not only washes your dog, but then marinates it in a tasty sauce.
In the other animal tech news, scientists say that octopuses are excited by high-definition televisions. You know what, Andy? I stand corrected. I said I couldn't think of any more important scientific breakthrough than a dog washing machine. I was wrong. It was this. We needed, nay, deserved, to know whether or not octopuses were excited by high-definition televisions.
This is yet another example of a science story involving someone caught wasting time at work. Hopkins, what are you doing watching the golf in high definition? You're supposed to be giving these octopuses cancer. Boss, delighted you just popped in. I just wanted to see if they would react more positively to Phil Mickelson or Ernie Els in high definition. Yeah, that's what I'm up to. Crumbs. You should have seen how ballistic they went when I put Maggie Gyllenhaal in Secretary on the telly. Wow! How many tentacles have those things got?
In experiments evaluating how the creatures react to moving images, the animals apparently responded far more vigorously to HDTV than standard def TV, and it appears that standard def moving images are not sufficiently convincing for the octopus. As a scientist went on to explain, it was a case of the technology not being up to the relatively high standard of octopus's eyesight. Oh, I am sorry, octopuses. I'm sorry that standard def TV was not enough of a quality picture for those multi-tentacled techno snobs. How were the Bose speakers, octopuses? Did they find the subwoofers a little too fuggy? Allow me to apologise on behalf of the entire human race for not providing you with high-def picture clarity to enjoy as you swim around in your own feces.
But is it really necessary, John, for octopuses to have
high-def? I'm calling you out, octopuses! I'm calling you out!
Scott. Did you get heckled by an octopus at a gig?
I think I found my first enemy, Andy. You know where I am, octopuses. I'm on the f***ing land. Come get me. Do you know what? I'll come to you. I'll see you in Boston Aquarium.
But is it necessary for them to have high definition, John? With the, you know, the kind of shit octopuses are like to want to watch. You know, wrestling, mostly. And home improvements programs.
Such a waste.
Yeah.
Such a waste.
Especially they'll just end up watching a late night horror film when they should be going to bed, getting all scared, and as a defence mechanism, squirting black ink all over the TV set and ruining the electrics. You know, is that all we want? Is that really what we want? Your emails now, and thank you to those of you who've been sending in suggested titles for my forthcoming Edinburgh Fringe show, for which I managed to extend the deadline a bit. So I don't have to decide quite yet. But thanks. This one came in from Peter Hyams, who writes, "Hello to Andy, Tom, and Chris." Brackets already far better than the last guy. Who's kept Tom in there. He thinks you've left the show, John. Andy, a couple of ideas for your gig's name. How about Anyone But Scotland? And 100 other things we'd say if you losers could play sports. Yeah, I just think doing that in Edinburgh, I mean, that's really inviting trouble. In fact, the first gig I ever did in Edinburgh, John. And I did I'd done a few gigs at university. I went up to Edinburgh Festival before I'd really started comedy, and I did a late night gig in Edinburgh. And my opening routine was about being given a Scotsman as a Christmas present, and it wasn't entirely complimentary towards the Scottish ilk, as I recall. And that gig went so badly that I then gave up stand up for 18 months. I think I might steer away from antagonistic, anti-Scottish titles. So, including this one, another one Peter suggested, Why I Hate Everyone and Everything About Scotland.
What?
Or A Detailed History of Scottish Sporting Successes, Estimated Runtime, 49 Seconds.
They want to get you killed.
Kabam. Take that. And he has also suggested, Thank God It's Not John Oliver. So there you go, he's slammed both of us, John, in one email.
Wow, ouch. Yeah.
And just one more. Yeah, many thanks to those of you who sent them in. If I get round to it, I'll do a blog with them in. How about that? What do you think of that? Hey, John?
Well, I think you're writing checks that your follow through on writing blogs can't cash, Andy.
This comes from Nim Wannan. Brackets, I'm not going to tell you how to pronounce it, just going to wait for you to mangle it. Okay, Nim. Well, there it is, Nim Wannan, who writes, who suggests, Andy Zaltzman, someone call the police. This man's travelling at 200 smiles per hour. There you go.
It's pretty strong, Andy. I'd go to that. And that would be very well paired with a poster with you just scowling. Thank you for all your emails about the greatest birds ever flipped. These are pretty inspiring stories, Andy. It's really brought people together again. there's a great one here from John H., John Hakayawa, who says, to John Zoltor and the late missing Tom and the new producer, regarding best incidents of being flipped the bird, I must enter this event. When I was 14, my dad was driving my best friend and myself to my uncle's house to use the pool on a warm summer afternoon. That is the kind of detail, Andy. When you're talking about a great bird flip, put us there. Put us in the picture. Sitting in the back seat of our station wagon, we drove by a house where a young girl, probably about 7 years old, stood on her front lawn wearing a Wonder Woman underoos. If you don't know, underoos were leotard-like cotton underwear printed with cartoon pictures or costumes, spinning a yellow lasso rope. My friend and I both thought this was cute as a kitten in a basket. So as the car passed her, we turned around and we waved at her through the back window. At this point, she paused, looked up, saw us smiling and waving at her, and, without changing her expression, with deliberate care, raised her free hand and shot us a bird. My friend and I have been laughing about that ever since and have proudly worn the badge of having been flipped off by Wonder Woman. We're grown-ups, he's getting his PhD, and I could probably call him up right now and he'd still laugh himself hoarse. Fantastic. Flipped off by a 7-year-old Wonder Woman. I've got to say, Andy, that is a good bird. What a bird.
Excellent, excellent bird. And several of you have sent emails in welcoming Chris, the new producer, to the show. Chris, how are you enjoying it so far?
I'm having a great, great time. Really.
Thank you, Chris.
You're much better at saying things like you mean them than Tom was.
Much better, yeah.
This one came in from Joe in Leeds, who just writes, Chris, do you ski?
That was the question to Tom. Same question went to Tom.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what was Tom's answer?
I believe it was he does not ski.
Yeah.
Well, I share this with Tom.
Right.
Really? Okay.
Do not ski.
I can't believe we keep getting non-skiing producers.
Non-skiing. I thought, Andy, I mean, I know this is awkward to talk about with Chris hearing, but I thought we talked about this. We needed a skier.
What if we ever have to record the bugle at the top of a mountain?
That's
and then
what
the producer
I'm saying.
Has to ski it down to post it on the internet?
That's
where the f*** are you going to be?
I can fall.
Right, oh, there you go.
Strap
That's
it to your body,
nothing.
Chuck yourself off the edge. That is the kind of selfless attitude that I like in a producer, Chris.
For you, Andy, definitely.
Well done, mate.
Not John.
But not everyone seems to be pleased that you're here, Chris. I mean,
no.
I think, a bit of bullying here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a number of people did send in slightly less complimentary welcoming emails. This one comes from Daniel Heiser, who writes, welcome to Chris, the new producer. That's the subject. Dearest Andy, John, and new producer Chris. F*** you, Chris! You will never, ever replace the hole left in my life by the formerly Scottish producer Tom. You stupid ass f***ing fucking flaming retarded grabbing piece of shit.
What?
I hate you already, you royal prickiness. Here is why I hate you, you fat fuck, Chris. One, you're not Scottish. Two, your name starts with a C, which is my least favourite letter. Three, you are a flamboyant member of the BNP. Is that true? Four, you sicken me. Five, your name isn't Tom, Thomas, Tomothy, Thomas or T-Bone. Six, I'm suffering from the loss of a family member, brackets Tom, and I need to overcome the grief first. With utter hatred and love, Daniel Heiser.
Wow.
I was really grateful for that. I do like the idea of a flamboyant member of the BNP as
yeah,
well.
That's it. So often they really put their they really repress their showbiz instincts. All that zazz is just covered by the bile. Such a shame.
Bugle Sport now, and well, there's only one place to start in sports news this week, and that is my daughter Matilda has triumphed in her nursery school obstacle course challenge in a grueling 5-lap marathon around a technically very testing course featuring some bales of hay, some small crash mats, some ribbon going in and out of some stuff, and some breakneck hairpin bends reminiscent of the Monaco Grand Prix. My little girl crushed the opposition in a display of athletic dominance over obstacles surely unseen since Edwin Moses demolished all comers in the 400-metre hurdles for more than a decade in the 70s and 80s. She sailed over the barriers like Arkell at Cheltenham, only without the tiny man on her back. She blazed around the corners like slalom skier Alberto Tombra in his imperious and unstoppably Italian pomp. She flashed down the finishing straight like a young, white, female, very short Jesse Owens in 1936 Berlin. Well, I might be slightly overstating. Proud dad. Did she win? Well, no, but it wasn't really a race. She completed the course.
Okay, so that's kind of winning her way. Now, has she had her urine test, Andy?
Well, that is coming back. But you know, I was as all parents, I got a bit competitive, John. So I have been slightly juicing her food recently.
Did she enjoy it? Was it an enjoyable experience, or was it all just about completion for her?
Well, I mean, that was. She was focused on the job, John. It's not really about fun at that level of competition.
Yeah,
it's about getting the job done, and then you savour it afterwards, not while you're doing it.
But, that's what. When she retires from obstacle courses, that's when she can look back at what she achieved.
That's right. But here, Buglers, is your chance to make her efforts count, because this run was in aid of Sport Relief, which is the sport-based charity fundraising extravaganza taking place here in Britain this weekend. So school did this special Sport Relief thing, and all the parents sponsor them. But what I'm asking you, Buglers, for is a bit of sponsorship for my daughter. If every single potential bugler retrospectively sponsors my daughter for her obstacle course, just $10,000 each, we will raise $70 trillion.
Oh, wow.
For the world, John. That could solve all the world's problems.
That's amazing.
So, but I'm not asking for that much, because I tried to put that in as the fundraising target on the on the website, but it would only allow me 9 digits. So I've lowered the target to £700 million, which is around $1 billion. What I'm going to ask of you, Buglers, I'm just going to ask you to donate 10 British pence, that's around 15 US cents, to Sport Relief. You need to go to www.mysportrelief.com/hellobuglers, that's one word, or to sportrelief.com and type Zaltzman in the search box and give 10 pence. Now, I've given 10 pence, that's the kind of guy I am. John?
Andy, I've given 10 pence as well.
You're a hero.
So currently it's 20 pence.
20 pence.
Which up there, about 30 US cents.
Chris,
come on, Buglers.
Chris, the new producer, he's already so committed to the Bugle project, the Bugle brand, that he's going to put in 10 pence as well.
Oh, I can claim it back, I will, yeah.
Yeah. That's just 2 pence a lap. That's about 0.4 pence per obstacle. 10 pence, you can afford that, Buglers. You've all got computers, for heaven's sake. And if you can't afford it, sell your computer or go on the game. So
you'll still have a lot of money left over. Of your 10 pence donation.
10 pence each. Let's see how much we can raise with our 10 pence donations. You can give more if you want.
I would suggest not giving more, Andy. Okay. I'd suggest just giving 10 pence.
I might, if it's an embarrassing amount at the end, I'll top it up. But I might have to put in a bit more when Matilda says, Daddy, why did you only put 10 pence in? I put it out there. I left nothing on the obstacle course. I gave 110%. I laid it on the line. Put some cash down. So there it is, www.mysportrelief.com/hellobuglers or sportrelief.com and search for Zaltzman. Let's see how much we can raise. And in fact, that is the subject of this week's forecast, John.
Yeah.
How much?
Oh, great.
How many 10p donations?
Okay.
What will it tot up to, John, from the Buglers for Matilda's Obstacle Course Challenge?
I would be That's a good question.
Yeah.
I would be happy, like logistically, I'd be happy with just more than 100 people doing it.
Right, so more than we're looking for to break 10 quid.
10 quid. That would, I'd already be impressed.
Right.
If we did that.
I did put £700 million as the target.
that's your mistake, Andy.
Yeah.
That's the problem that you have of setting unachievable goals.
Right. But, Buglers, don't let me down. Don't let me down. I mean, we just need 700... That just needs 7 billion people to give 10p. That's just everyone in the world giving 10. Is that much?
It'll be interesting, Andy. It'll be an interesting experiment. Yeah. Next week, let's see how many 10p's.
That's www.mysportrelief.com/hellobuglers.
Think of Matilda.
It's not actually going to her, unless I can find a way of diverting the funds. But anyway, thank you in advance for your generosity, Buglers. 10p. Come on. What have we ever asked for you, apart from time and indulgence?
Yeah. Which we will not return.
So that's it. Thank you for listening, Buglers. Chris, how's it been for a first go?
It's been amazing.
And you're already 10p down. Yeah. You're already in the hole.
Already sounding slightly less genuine than the last time I asked you how it was going. This is how it went with Tom as well.
You said a month to break me, didn't you, earlier? So we'll see.
That's right.
Bye-bye, Buglers. Bye-bye.
Bye!
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.